I'm your host, Alexa Curtis, and I'm so excited because now that we've passed 50 episodes, I feel like the sky is the limit. I've been having so many incredible guests on. I hope you especially liked last week's episode. So I had Nicolette Mason on. I followed her for such a long time. She also appeared on Fearless Every Day, which is the Disney show. And then I published her more kind of unfiltered episode on This Is Life Unfiltered. So for those of you who are wondering what the difference is between both shows, because I've gotten some questions about them, this podcast is obviously the launching point kind of to my career and especially how I got the show on Disney. So this one talks much more in filter to people who really inspire me. And Disney is much more heavily edited and shorter, but you can listen to Fearless Every Day directly on Radio Disney's platforms as well as Sirius XM. And This Is Life Unfiltered. You can download our app to listen, all podcast streaming sites and whatnot. So make sure to follow us on social media. It's at This Is Life Podcast. So today I've got a special guest on. I did a talk a few weeks ago at UCLA in partnership with, I think it was the Boys and Girls Clubs of Los Angeles. And I was on a panel with different people from a different range of fields, a little bit older than me, talking about social media, mental health, entrepreneurship. And the person who I spoke next to, along with, I think it was two other people who were on the panel, Arabian Prince. And if you guys don't know who he is, he's one of the founding members of NWA, which I have heard is basically the biggest rap group out there that launched back in the 80s. So when we did this talk, kids were coming up to him and freaking out. And I was like, I know these names, but I don't know what that there was like a group to these people. But when I tell you guys how there are so many successful people who, quote unquote, haven't come from anything and they really launched their careers just by hard work and passion for what they're doing, he is one of the definitions of that kind of person. So thank you so much for stopping by the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're originally from Compton, California, which is a little bit away from LA, and that's where you live now. But take us back to the beginning, how you got started, everything about you.
Wow. So growing up as a little kid in Compton was, you know, Compton, you know, people see what they see on TV and what they hear in records about Compton and the hoods in Los Angeles. And yeah, when I was growing up, it was the hood and, you know, the ghetto, what some people would call it. But, you know, everybody had loving families. But one thing that I was surrounded by was a lot of, you know, gangs and drugs and a lot of things like that growing up. My uncles and cousins were a lot of the crazy people doing a lot of the bad stuff. And my moms didn't really want me to get into that. So she decided to, you know, keep me out of that by putting me in Catholic school and thought that that would keep me on the straight and narrow. But, you know, Catholic schools in Compton are still Catholic schools in Compton. And, you know, things happen there as well. But, you know, because of my mom, she really did kind of keep me on that path to do something a little bit different. So growing up, I had the affinity to actually want to learn more and know more and get into more things. And as I got a little bit older, you know, rap had just started to kind of surface up. And I started rapping in the school, and that was kind of the beginning of that next thing for me.
I know when we spoke at UCLA that you had mentioned that I think you didn't want to go to college, right? And your mom forced you to go.
Right.
So what was that experience like for you? I mean, how do you think that college even played a part in your life today?
I think it did because, you know, for me, I'm all about the quest of knowledge in general. And I think everyone should be. And, you know, with the advent of technology today, you have knowledge at the tip of your fingers and your phone and the internet immediately. But back then you didn't. So you really had to go to a higher learning, you know, university or college or city, whatever. You had to go to school to really, really learn or read books or whatever. And, you know, me being this, I was really into sports. I just wanted to play football. So I'm like, I don't need to go to college. I just want to play football. And my mom's like, nah, you're going to go to school. And then I started rapping and I'm, you know, DJing, and I started making a career out of DJing. I think when I was 15 years old, I started making money DJing. That was my job at 15 years old. And when I was 16 years old, I made my first record by myself. Like, I walked into a recording studio and I figured it out and I made a record. So for me, I'm like, I don't need to go to school, you know, because I'm already making money. And luckily I did, because it taught me a lot as to how to take care of the business side of a lot of things. So,
would you consider yourself to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I would consider myself to be. I don't like to really like the word entrepreneur.
Why?
Because I hate titles.
Okay.
You know, like CEO, and even though I put it on my card, or what are you? Are you the CEO of this company? I'm like, we're all people. Everybody has their job. You know, I mean, I often talk about when I meet other CEOs, they're not just the CEO. A lot of them are really passionate about their companies and the things they do. So they're the CEO, they're the marketing director, they do a lot of things. And I just think that everybody has a job, and we don't need those titles. So for me, if you want to give me a title, I'm a futurist, because I'm all about what's next. Mm-hmm. Like, I could care less about what's now. I'm trying to figure out what's next. So that's
me. I love that. I would put that on a bumper sticker. But so back in the 80s, that's when you said you kind of got into music, right? What was music like even back then? I mean, I was born 1997. So you were born like when my sister was born.
Right.
And that whole world, especially with social media, has changed so much. But I'm so curious about the music industry and what kind of catapulted your interest into music.
So, you know, I mentioned a little earlier, my uncles and cousins were all crazy. And because they were crazy and, you know, into gangs and drugs and stuff, they all got sent away to the military. And when they came back, semi-reformed, they would come back with cool stuff from overseas after being on a ship for 6 months or a year, or, you know, they would come back from Europe or Asia with toys and, I mean, like electronics and synthesizers and stereo systems and ham radio. So I was this little, you know, 8-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid playing with all this cool gear. And that kind of kept me out the streets because, well, that and my uncles told me if they caught me in the streets, they would kick my, can I say ass?
Yeah.
They would kick my ass, you know, so those two things kind of kept me grounded. But that's what got me interested in music. And, you know, I would get put with my uncle every weekend to hang out because I had a cool uncle. And I would hang out with him on the weekend. And all he did was he had a bunch of vinyl records and stuff to listen to. So I got introduced to Parliament Funkadelic and Prince and all the funk and other things. But the music, and you said that the music back in the 80s was kind of a weird thing because there was not this radio station thing where there was a pop station and a hip hop station or R&B station. There may have been a few, but for the most part, top 40 was this crazy mix of music. You're looking at, you had like Depeche Mode and Cyndi Lauper and Grace Jones, and then you had your Rick James and Prince and Parliament Funkadelic. So you had punk rock, new wave, funk, R&B, all kind of, you know, on the same radio station. So as a growing up DJ, I played everything. Yeah.
And I know you're really into tech, which I want to talk about in a little bit. But I mean, tech wise back then as well, you don't have what are they called? Like the DJ, not sets. What's the thing that
they have?
The boards.
Well, no, they had turntables and mixers.
Turntables.
Back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had turntables and mixers back then. But now everybody does it digitally with Serato and their laptops. But it was all vinyl back then. You had a mixer, two turntables and vinyl records, you know, and that was pretty much it. And, you know, if you talk about other technology, I mean, we didn't even have like cell phones. We had pagers. Like, you have a pager, and if, you know, we figured out how to do little codes on your pager. So you would say, okay, a 7 is an L and a 3 is an E or E is a 3. And you would try to like spell out words on your pager. And that's how you would communicate.
That's back in the day. All right. So you're 15 here, right? And you find out kind of that you're into music and you start exploring that. But then you're also into football.
Yes.
So are you in the kind of two different crowds of like the kind of nerdy music kids and then like the football jocks? Where did you fit in when it came to high school?
So it's crazy. I was in three crowds. So I was in the cool football jock, I guess you want to call it, crowd. And then there were a few guys who were just rapping at lunch. We go rap on the bleachers and battle each other and you just write words and you say stuff. And then the third crowd, because I had this interest in technology and electronics back then, it was like I was in like the D&D club, Dungeons and Dragons club, and all these other little side clubs. So I got to hang out with a little bit of everybody. And I think that's what shaped the type of music I did and the things that I did in the music industry and later on in technology, because I was a part of a lot of different cliques.
I get it. Yeah. Did you ever find back then, I mean, social media obviously wasn't around, so I can't ask you how like social media was affecting kids, but in terms of bullying and anxiety and depression, was there a lot back in the day with kids, and what do you think was stemming it, or not really?
No, there was a lot of bullying, but it was, you know, there was no social media. So the bullying was more direct. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember I was at one school and I got transferred to another school. And when I got to the other school, it was a rival school from a school I went to. And I was on the football team at both schools. But because I came from the rival school, a lot of the dudes on the new team didn't like me. You know what I mean? So I had a lot of issues with that. People trying to bully me. And I remember I got sucker punched once by some fool. And that was the last time that happened. Because I retaliated.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I wasn't the one to get bullied. But it happens, you know. And it's always people preying on the weaker kids and stuff like that. And I think even back then, because I was a part of the different cliques, I tried to, you know, help as much as I can. Man, leave him alone. He ain't messing with you and stuff like that. You know, I was always the one trying to keep the peace.
Yeah, kind of staying above the noise. I'm curious, if you said a lot of your family was kind of involved in gangs and stuff, how did you stay out of that? What kept you on top of not getting in with the bad crowds?
Well, my mom, and like I said, part of it was like common sense for me, because I would see I remember I'd come home with my grandmother one day and here's my uncle staggering down the street. You know, somebody had stabbed him in the head. He was in a gang fight, you know, or another uncle got shot, or these things were happening.
It was just like casual for me.
Yeah. You see it all the time. And then you kind of like, I don't want that. And then as my uncles got smarter, they was like protecting me. Like, dude, you better not, because you got to deal with us. And I was more scared of my uncles than the people in the street. So that's what kind of kept me out of it.
I talked to a lot of kids that it's like, I kind of have that same perception of life, as it's like, why would you go down a negative path when you could choose a positive one? But nowadays, especially, but even a few years ago, it was just as difficult for kids to determine kind of the positive route versus the negative route, depending on the crowd they're in. So do you have any advice for kids who are like getting in with the wrong crowd, or don't have the best friends around them, and they don't know how to get out of that?
Yeah. What people got to remember is everybody's got their own brain. Everybody does. And if you don't like an idea, don't do it. Don't let somebody talk you into something. Now, if someone said, hey, let's go jump off this bridge, and if you're stupid enough to go jump, that's your problem. But if you're smart enough not to jump, and somebody keeps egging you on and pressuring you on, and then you do jump and something happens, that's on you, because you're smart enough initially to say no. Don't let the pressure get you. I was the only child, no brothers or sisters, so I think I was a lot more independent than other kids, because I often see kids who have brothers and sisters, a lot of them are followers, because the eldest or the most powerful in of the siblings is like, okay, we're going to do this. And you may not want to do it, but it's your brother, your sister, and you just follow along.
You believe what they say.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you're playing football and you're also DJing and kind of rapping. When did you decide which path to pursue? Because I want to know what happened between 15 and 18, because that's a crucial period of time.
Right. Well, what happened was, and this was something that I had to figure out, because my mom's was a little overprotective, especially because where we were living. And
what did your mom do for a career?
My mother also was a classical pianist, so I think that's why I more or less got into music too, because she was trying to force me to learn the piano, which I didn't want to learn because I wanted to play football.
Yeah, so yeah.
It was that kind of thing. And then on top of it, it was the influence of wanting to get out of the house, because my mother was very overprotective. So being 14, 15 years old, and my friends are all going to the mall, and she's like, I don't want you to go to the mall because it's dangerous, or I don't want you hanging out because it's dangerous. I'm like, well, I want to hang out, so I need to figure out a way to get out the house. And I finally figured it out. If I become a DJ, I'm the first person at the party, the last one to leave. I am the party, and my mother can bring me, and no one's going to laugh because I got to bring my equipment. So I saved up money and bought some DJ gear.
On a scale of 1 to 10, if you aren't familiar with Compton, straight out of Compton.
Yeah.
I guess if you've seen that movie, then you might have an idea. But I mean, I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, how unsafe was Compton when you were growing up? You know, 1 being the most safe and 10 being the most unsafe.
I would say it was about a 6 or a 7. I don't think it was a 10. And there was places that I could name that's worse than Compton. But when you lived there, in your neighborhood, you were kind of safe, but it was the problem when you had gangs and the, you know, like the borderlines. Like if you knew you crossed like on one side of the park where I lived at was our area, or you know, it's all this kind of gang. And then if you crossed the other side of the park, it was another gang. And if people on that side knew you lived on that side, you had an issue. So sometimes you'd have to walk way around to go places you need to go. And it was a headache. I call it a headache.
It was a little unsafe.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think that's where everyone grows up, where they grow up for a reason. That's how, what made you become who you are
today.
Right,
right. You become strong. And I call it a lot more common sense. Yeah. I have a lot of common sense.
I bet. Oh, my yeah. God. So you're saying what happened between 15 and 18?
Yeah.
So, like those ages.
Yeah, yeah. So like I said, I became a DJ and I was able to go DJ parties at a young age and I was able to make money. So I'm like, this is kind of cool. So football is cool. I still think I can play football and I did. But I was really starting to get into this thing of music and DJing. And that's where I met Dr. Dre, who everybody knows who he is. And Ice Cube and DJ Yella and some of these other cats who eventually became NWA. From DJing, we all used to hang out together and DJ together. And yeah, that's what turned me into that. Yeah.
Were your grades starting to slip at all with you participating in football and DJing?
Yeah. It's the funny thing is, I have a pretty high IQ. I don't say unfortunately, cause I don't really believe in IQ stuff either. I believe that people are smart. You know, there are kids that who get D's and F's. And it's not because they're dumb. It's because they're not interested in what somebody's trying to teach them.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's some kids I know that don't do well in school, but I can sit there and talk to them about sports stats and they can name off all the stats. So they're not dumb. They're just not interested.
Yeah. And some kids apply themselves to certain things and some don't.
There you go. So I think that was the difference for me is I love knowledge. I love acquiring knowledge. And my grades were good. Matter of fact, there's coming out of elementary school, there's a picture of me and like the cardinal or, you know, like the guys and like the Pope with the big staff and the big hats and stuff, you know, because I was like the valedictorian of the class or something like that. So, yeah.
So how did you start learning how to DJ? Because is that something people have to train themselves how to do? I mean, there was no self-help book for dummies on DJing.
No, it wasn't. My father had a radio station at a radio station called KACE in L.A. And when he was on his talk show, I would go into the control room, and that's where all of the records were that they played during the music time. And I would sit in there and just mess with music, and then I figured out I could mix stuff together and make little cassettes. You don't know what cassettes are, you're too young. But I would make cassettes, and I would sell them at school, like fake mixtapes. It wasn't even a real mixtape. It was just I could barely mix, but I would blend records together and make a 30-minute, hour-long tape or whatever, and I would sell it. And I'd make money. And I'm like, this is cool. So I eventually figured out how to DJ from just being in there doing that.
Was there a point when you started making money or were you making no money from the beginning?
No, I was making money from the first time I started DJing.
How?
Like I told you, no one was doing it. And we would have school dances and they would just like play music. And I'm like, well, I can DJ. And another buddy of mine, I'm going to say his name. We used to call him Termite. Derek. And we got together and told our parents we saved up a little money. And he bought a turntable. I bought a turntable. We bought a mixer together. We bought some wood. We made a little case for our turntables. We made our own speakers. Like, we literally went to Radio Shack and bought raw speakers and made wood boxes and put the speakers in. But what we didn't know is just because you put a speaker in a box, it doesn't sound good. You got to know about other stuff.
That's like where the tech stuff comes in.
Yeah, tech stuff. And eventually we learned. We, you know, figured it out. So, yeah.
So back then, comparing music then when you were starting to music now, do you love the rap especially that's out now? Do you think it's not – because it's definitely a different style of music.
I love all music. And I've often said this. I understand all music because I was into all types of music growing up. So – for me, I love it because it's the future.
Yeah.
It's always going to change. Like, people hated the Beatles. Parents hated the Beatles. Parents hated the Rolling Stones. Parents hated, you know, ska and all these other forms of music, you know. But as time goes on, new music comes that people hate.
Yeah.
You know, it's just what the new generation loves.
I do think that nowadays, especially with rappers, that – some of it is much more derogatory and this, like, how they, like, the curse words and stuff right. that they keep in. And I think that's why maybe, I mean, parents definitely hated certain musics that their kids was listening to now. But from what I hear from parents now, it's gotten a little bit worse. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
Well, don't listen to an NWA album.
Is it bad? Because I know, like, one Dr. Dre song I know, and then, like, Ice Cube.
Yeah, don't ever listen to an NWA album. You may never have me back.
But that's also, like, the initial starting point of kind of the rap generation.
Right.
It's even, like, Tupac and stuff.
Well, you know what? What I tell people is this. We talked about what went on in our neighborhoods and what went on in the street. We were telling stories. And when you tell a story, you tell the real story. I think what's happened over time is people start to elaborate and, like, okay, that was said. I got to go worse. I need to say something worse than that because people have already talked about that. I need to, sensationalize it mm-hmm. and make it bigger and everything. So that's what happens now. And it's how the new generation talks to each other. You know, it's just what it is. And
yeah.
it'll change. And I'm seeing the change now from trap music and those kind of things into a different style.
That's what
style.
It's called, trap music, trap. Not rap.
So
yeah.
there's a different style now coming again. So it's always going to evolve and evolve and evolve and evolve and again. So there's always going to be the message, and there's always going to be the garbage.
A lot of kids who are in school, and you went to a Christian school, right?
Yeah, Catholic.
And then, Catholic, okay. And then you start DJing and playing football. And a lot of kids, I bet, have probably had parents who are not supportive as especially kind of a career in music because
right.
it's not an easy career to be successful in. But your mom was involved in music, so she would understand more. But, I mean, was she supportive from the get-go?
No.
Like, no, okay.
She did well. She was supportive of me making records, but then when we got in NWA, it was like she didn't know what it was at first. And she came to a concert. We did a concert with MC Hammer years ago at a big arena, and she just happened to be in Oakland with my stepfather at the time. And they came to the show, and I remember it was kind of a very trying experience for the group because I was like, "Man, my mom's in the audience." Like, what? How'd your mom get here? I said, "Well, she heard we had a concert. They was in town," and I'm like, we got to do the show. Whatever we say, we got to say. And we let loose on stage and killed it. But after the show, I was like, what you think, Mom? She's like, it was good. It was good. But can you guys tone it down a little bit?
Okay.
And I'm like, nah, we can't tone it down. But she understood. And she, you know, like I said, she forced me to keep going to school and doing things because rap was so new. And it was like, this is not going to last. Or, what is this? Yeah, you're making a little money now, but you need to figure out the future.
And now,
who knew?
What does she think now?
She's passed on. My mother's gone, and my father's gone. Everybody's, it's just me. But I remember I would put out records, and, you know, she goes, that's my son.
I bet you have incredible memories.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So,
I mean, it's the business industry. It's so cutthroat. Do you think it's more cutthroat now than when you first got into music, entertainment?
Yeah, because of the internet. Because people can make music quicker. Before, they still would have to pay you some money to make a record. Now, they don't have to pay you any money to make a record because most people are making the records for free because it's easy to make a record now.
Yeah.
So the music is done and you're giving your music to a company to put out and you're getting nothing. And you may never get anything.
What do you think about Spotify and SoundCloud and how that's changed the music industry?
I understand it, but especially for, like, the streaming services, they pay so little to the artist now. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how those deals were made. Like, somebody's making money because if I was getting paid, I think radio, when your song plays on the radio, that's a royalty. You get paid every time your song plays on the radio. It's not a lot of money. It's like, I think it's 5 cents or 3 cents or whatever the statutory rate is. But, streaming is different. You don't get paid that. You get like 0.00% of a penny per stream.
Yeah.
So you have to have hundreds of streams to make
thousands.
A small amount. Thousands of streams to make a small amount of money. Millions of streams to make even a decent amount of money. So I'm trying to figure out how those deals went.
I see people even bigger artists that I know of tweeting all the time like this, like let's fight to get Spotify.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't get it, but that means people have big
because
names.
I think they did the deals with their record companies, unfortunately, and it's just I don't know. But I think what's going to happen, and we talked about this offline, the whole blockchain thing. There's technology coming that's going to allow for artists to protect their music a lot better, And once that happens, I think it's going to stabilize more, and artists can be able to protect their entity more and be able to monetize it directly.
So you're really into tech. And so yes. Innovate Next is your one of your companies.
Yes.
You have two.
Yes.
So tell us about those and how you started with both of them.
Well, I have a few companies, but let's just talk about those two. So Innovate Next is just my tech company because, like I said, I'm always looking at what's next out there. So Innovate Next. And my other company is called Open Labs, which is going to be, some people call it an incubator. I just call it a laboratory. It's an open laboratory that we're going to build with some of my big tech partners to give back to kids and diversity groups and women in tech and veterans or anyone else. I say regular people because there needs to be a place where regular people can just come in and get inspired by tech and create ideas, because I hear all the time by people I talk to, like, man, I got this idea, but I don't know what to do with it. You know, I'm not a tech guy, but I know this could be something big. And I'm thinking to myself, it could. Let's figure out how to make this happen. So I kind of want to open it up to a lot of people across the country. So
yeah. I think that's a great point. And I also think with social media that people now, like, that term regular or normal.
Yeah.
It's like the regular people are on this side and then the entrepreneurs right. and the CEOs are on this side. And I think it's really frustrating because those regular people maybe have those big $1 million ideas, but they just right. haven't gotten lucky like the people who
and
have gone.
Eventually their idea will get made.
Yeah.
Because you know, everything, once it's in the ether, it's going to come to, you know, fruition. And the crazy thing is, the line is blurring already because of YouTube and because of social media and because of vlogging and things like that. Regular people are starting to figure it out mm-hmm. because consumer technology is not consumer anymore. Consumer technology is prosumer. Look at we're doing this podcast right now on a microphone and a laptop, mm-hmm. right? What's the difference between this and the full-blown radio station now? There is no difference. Mm-hmm. It's all digital audio. So looking at cameras, like, there are kids on YouTube with 4K full frame cameras that can go and shoot a feature film, and they're vlogging. So the lines have blurred. It's just now getting it to where people can understand that. And I think people who don't know tech don't know how fortunate they have it and don't know how far they can actually progress if they had a little more knowledge.
Do you think that the access to the internet, it's like going in the right direction? It's great for kids to be like on their phones the amount that they are nowadays, and they're learning so much or no?
So I say it's inevitable. You can't stop it. You can't stop the progression of technology. And one thing I think that has to happen is the way that schools teach has to change to how the next generation is taking and ingesting information. So for me, meaning that I speak at a lot of schools and universities, and sometimes I'll talk to the kids offline from the teacher, and I'll ask the kids, like, what's the biggest problems you guys have in your class? Like, what are you frustrated about? And most of them say the same thing. It's like, we're learning too slow. Because the teacher will ask a question, and a kid nowadays, you ask me a question, I don't know the answer. What's the first thing they do? They grab their phone, they go and they Google it, right? But in class, you can't. You have to learn the old-fashioned way and retain the information. But at a certain point, it's going to be why. Because at home, in my house, I literally have Google, and I'm not sponsored by Google or anything like that, but I got Google speakers everywhere, Google assistants all over the house, right? What's the weather? Okay, Google, what's this? Okay, Google, what's that? But, you know, it's just right there for you. And we have to change the way we teach now. So my vision is ultimately it's actually going to go back to how it used to be in the olden times when you had a family that was, okay, you guys farm, you guys, you know, do this, you guys do that. And what do you want to do? Okay, as a little kid, I want to be a fireman, right? Okay, fine. You may change your mind later. But once you get to a certain age, you kind of start to know what you want to do. Once you get to past elementary school, you're thinking, I really like this social media stuff, or I really like this marketing thing, or I really like electronics. I want to go into something like that. I think that's where it needs to change is once a kid kind of has an interest in something, start to push them in those directions so they can learn that a lot faster and a more accelerated pace to get to what they want to get to sooner.
When we did the talk at UCLA, you said something that I've done like four talks since, and I've said the same thing. You asked a question, who wants to be famous? This is like to a group of what? There's everyone's like under 18.
Yes, 14 most of them. To 18.
Yeah. Who wants to be famous and rich? And everyone raised their hand. Right. And then what did you say? Who wants to be happy?
Who wants to be happy and successful?
And maybe five out of like 100 kids raised their hand.
Yeah, because being successful, there's a difference between being famous and being successful. You can be famous for being in a Bronco being chased by police. You know what I mean? Or you can be famous for holding up a bank. But successful is a different word. And I think that it's better when people are successful and understand that, yes, you can have both. But the most important thing is to be happy and to be successful enough to where you don't have to worry about anything. And if you want fame, you can attain fame if that's what you want. Me, I don't care about fame, you know, as much. I love being able to walk down the street. A lot of people don't know who I am, and I love it. Like, we're in Hollywood. I can, when I leave here, I'm going to Best Buy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a shopaholic, so I'll go shop and don't have to worry about it. Ice Cube can't just walk in Best Buy. Dr. Dre can't just walk in Best Buy. So I understand it, and I love the life that I live doing this. And for me, it's about technology and about giving back.
I think it's so incredible because you're incredibly humble as well for your success and who you are. So just that itself, I think, hopefully shows you guys exactly what you're saying, the happiness and the success thing. To have both, is there one key trait or thing you need to follow to have that both, that success and that happiness?
I would say understand what you want. A lot of people don't know what they want. You can talk to a lot of people. What do you want to do? Like, I ask kids all the time, and they're like, I don't know. Well, what makes you happy? Oh, no. They don't know. I know what makes me happy.
What makes you happy?
Creating, watching cartoons. You know what I mean? Inspiring people. Those are the things that make me happy. And because of that, that's what I want to do. And I love shopping. So I figured, okay, I like shopping. I like buying toys and things and playing video games and all these things. You have to be successful so you can generate enough money to do these things. Mm-hmm. So it's not about the money. It's about doing things that allow you to do the things you want to do in life.
And work ethic, too.
Work ethic, yeah. I'm 20 hours a day, unfortunately. I'm always working on something. So.
How do you think that luck plays into, like, success or fame versus hard work and work ethic?
I think luck does play into it here and there. But even if you get lucky and are able to get in, hard work is what keeps you in.
Yes, that is such a good point. That is crucial to this game, this maze that people are trying to find, especially with like social media.
There you go.
Yeah. But what's your end game? Like, where would you want to see yourself in 10 years?
I mean, I'm already there where I want to see myself, period. I'm already here doing what I want to do. And I don't think that any more money or any more, you know, like, for me, it's not about the money, but it's all about creating the future. And that's where I think I want to be. And that's what I'm doing, is creating the future, working with a lot of different companies, looking at, I'm really good at this. I work with other companies. Now look at what they've created in their IP, and I help them make it better, help them make it so that more people can enjoy what they've created. Mm-hmm. Or because some big corporate companies, including your Apples and your, you know, Microsofts and other companies, they get so big where they lose the touch of the consumers that use their products. And then you hear the complaints about, why did they make this? And why did they do that? Or why is the button here? Or why is the camera do this and not that?
Yeah.
If they work more with the people who use their products, everyone will make better technology. So that's one of the things.
You mentioned that one of the projects, you know, companies, whatever, that you've started focuses on women in tech. I'm curious about that. I mean, do you think that there aren't enough women in tech?
Yeah, they're not, because there are some amazing women out there who have ideas and who actually work in tech already, but you don't hear much about many of them. And I often say people are people, but people aren't equal. And that kind of rhymes.
People are people, but people aren't equal. Yeah.
It's wrong. Mm-hmm. We're all human beings on this planet, and everyone should be equal in whatever we do or created equal. But as we always hear, this CEO who's a man is making three times more than that same CEO who's a woman, or this engineer who's a man gets promoted faster than this engineer who's a woman who may have created something even more amazing than he created. So it should be an equal playing field, but it never is. Mm-hmm. So in my quest for making better products, I said, you know what? What if I work with all the underdogs who have all these amazing ideas, who are talented as hell, and create these new platforms so that they can be amazing and successful and everybody will win?
It's the same with even the fashion industry. They just started putting out models who are not a size negative zero.
Right. There you go.
So the industry's going in the right way, but I mean, why is it going so slowly? Like, why is not every girl in a campaign not looking like she hasn't eaten for a year and a half?
Because the people, and I'm going to say this because I'm old. I'm old. I've been around forever. But the people who still run and control everything have not died yet. And I say that in a joking way, yeah. But it's the truth. The control of a lot of medias and a lot of companies are still by older people who have an older mindset. I'm an older person with a younger mindset because mm-hmm. I'm in entertainment. I've been in music my whole life. I'm a rapper. I'm a DJ. So I got the pulse on what's going on in the world. But the problem is a lot of the older corporate guys don't get it, and they don't listen to the people that they hire to help them get it. The people will give them ideas. I do that. I sit in offices every day. Dude, do this. And they'll go, okay.
Yeah,
and
they don't do it.
And then they wonder why they're not selling product and wonder why they're not doing this or that. So it has to change.
Do you think it's lack of interest from those people? Because I've worked with them too, just in taking on those ideas that are so uncomfortable for them. Or is it they have no clue?
They have no idea. Uh-huh. And they think that the way that they've been trained, it's training. Training is making you do something over and over perfectly. So when you're trained for 30 years to do something one way over and over, it's so hard to not do it anymore because that's the way you learn. That's the way I was successful doing this for 30 years. We're going to keep doing it that way.
Yeah.
Basketball is different. Football is different. Technology is different. The way that we talk to each other is different. You know what I mean? Like I remember, I was saying, we went back to the pager thing. Mm-hmm. If social media in the 70s and the 80s was, hey, you're at school talking to someone, and when you leave them, it's like, hit me later. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you were old enough to have a phone in your room, maybe you could hit them later. If not, you would not talk to them until the next day. So it's changed in the fact that you can really reach out and touch somebody immediately, either by phone or text or social media or visually. I see people walking down the street FaceTiming and, you know, like walking down the street talking to somebody on video. And I thought I would never see that. I actually see people doing it in their car.
I see people doing it at the gym.
Yeah.
On the elliptical.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how things have changed. So yeah, it's a different world. And the people who run parts of it need to understand it's and change accordingly.
Yeah, agreed. If you had one last piece of advice for young people listening who I think want to get their start in entertainment, what's your first piece of advice? And they don't know, they have stuff and they know what they want to do, but they don't know how to put it out there. What's the first step?
Research. Everything's out there. Information on anything you want to do in this world is right there. Even for me. So I just bought a 3D printer. Oh my God, I'm 3D printing.
A 3D printer.
Wait, hold on. So I don't know if you heard the guy who created SpongeBob recently passed away, Hillenburg. Okay. I'm mourning. I just made this in my
3D printer. How did you make that?
That's 3D printed.
Is that plastic?
Yeah, 3D printed SpongeBob. And I 3D print everything.
What?
I made like, I had one print I just did for a friend, his logo. Took 12 hours to print. But it's, you know, you can print anything in 3D now. And I didn't know about 3D printers.
Yeah.
I know how to do 3D animation and special effects. But I went on YouTube, started doing my research, and now I think I'm pretty good. I'm almost like a professional at it already, but anything you want to do, there's information out there right now.
That's crazy.
And I often say, don't wait, because everybody says, oh, just wait, slow down. Why?
No.
These, think about it, half of the billionaires in the world never finished school. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they didn't want to finish. They went to university or went to college. Once they figured it out and started making money, they did their thing.
Yeah.
So don't wait. If there's something you really are passionate about, learn it and do it.
Don't wait for somebody else to give you the chance.
There you go.
Yeah. No, yeah. I like what you say about those people going to college. And they all went. I mean, until they found their purpose. Some people find their purpose at 50. Some people find their purpose at 15.
Right. Look at you. You're Disney and podcast and what else is next for you?
Yeah,
I'm going to hire you. Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be all kind of stuff.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You're so sweet. Thanks. No, I mean, it's right. It really comes to finding the purpose, which you found at such a young age.
Yeah.
But also you still went a traditional route and then you still went back to kind of your roots, what you know you're good at.
But
I think you're awesome and such an inspiration. So thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Where can people find out more about you? Anything on social media or the website?
Well, my social is just OG Arabian Prince. So OG Arabian Prince at Instagram, OG Arabian Prince at Twitter. The company is Innovate Next. It's spelled weird. I like spelling things.
I like it.
So it's INOV, the number 8, next.com. That's the company. And yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's all I have for you this week. Check out Arabian everywhere and make sure to not, I think, give up on yourself, or also don't wait for somebody to give you an opportunity that you can give to yourself. I think you and I can both vouch for that, right?
And get your SpongeBob fix in every day.
Oh, go to your house and get a whole 3D. I've heard about those, but I'm just like, there's certain things like, people who are like, I want an Apple Watch and I want AirPods and I want an iPad. And I'm like, is there ever too much? Anywho, that's a wrap for episode 54. I hope you guys loved this episode. Make sure to follow along on social media at my personal social media, Alexa_Curtis. And stay tuned to hear more about the Be Fearless Summit coming to Drexel University March 15th. Have a great week, you guys. Bye.